Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 94 of Little Things for Bonsai People. We are counting down. We are six episodes away from episode 100 and also announcing our scholarship person we will be awarding by that time we do the episode as well. Yeah, if you guys are not aware, we could talk about this in just a second, but there is a scholarship going to be presented by the Little Things. And speaking of the Little Things, we have the other little thing, Carmen Leskovienski. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
You are quite short, so it does make
a little bit more sense. I'm used to it. It's fine.
You're not that short.
I'm pretty short. Getting there.
Shrinking?
I don't
know. People get shorter when they get older, but that's only sure. When you start to really hunch over.
Really anyway, old.
Today, we're going to be taking it easy on this episode because we had quite an in-depth conversation with Julian Tsai on the previous one, and that one was draining. Not because he was a bad guest or anything. It was just a lot to conceptualize, I guess you can say. If that's a word, my mind was bent, talking to Julian. He's a very, very smart young man. I'm very happy that, we have people his age getting into bonsai and as brilliant as he is. If you guys haven't heard that episode, I would highly recommend going back one. If this is your first episode, listen to Julian. And also, he's going to be one of my headliners at, say, Bonsai 2025. So that's really cool. But anyway, getting back to reality, to this week, how are things where you are at, Carmen?
Do you want to finish the intro, or do you want me to just go into all the things?
You can just talk. If it's not a light recap, I can definitely go through the intro, and then we can come back around to it.
I will. Things are good. Things are really busy. I've got about 2 weeks until I am done with my apprenticeship, and I am exhausted because I just have a whole list of projects I'm trying to work my way through, and they always take me much longer than I think they will, and probably that they should. So I'm just, my brain is just fried.
And
a couple more weeks and just, plowing through it all.
So we will be doing a reflection and a few episodes here of Carmen's time. I wouldn't say locked away, but, locked away at a bonsai tower, I guess, doing the apprenticeship for 4 years. Should be really interesting. So we'll see how you feel. I wish we could have talked and had some kind of conversation, like get all like chipper and bushy tail Carmen, like at the very beginning of your apprenticeship and see where you're at now.
But yeah, grizzled. You can go back. There's a couple episodes of Bonsai Wire, one before I started the apprenticeship, and then one, I think there was like a kind of a check-in fun. A few months in. So you can see how much more tired I am now.
Let's see. There's one where you talk about accents. Way before that.
Way back.
Chat with Carmen Leskovienski.
That's me.
I think that's it. January 2nd, 2021.
Yes, that is. Yeah. Oh, gosh. That feels like so long ago.
Yep. And that is on the Bonsai Wire podcast, another awesome podcast that, Carmen was actually part of the crew and still is. So if you guys want to go check out that podcast, but we'll also be having Bonsai Wire on this show pretty soon. Don't know when quite. I think if it's going to be next episode or the next after that, but we'll see. We'll see what's going on there. Spoiler alert. But anyway, before we get into our topic, which is indoor bonsai and is it really a thing, I wanted to do something a little bit controversial, something that people ask about a lot. We're going to do some clickbaity stuff here and be like, indoor bonsai ? for the title of this episode, I guess. But before we get into the controversy and nuance of raising your bonsai indoors. Well, we do need to mention that this podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. I'm on a speed run on this one. Head on over there to become a bonsai best bud and hang out in the Discord with these amazing people. We have so many patrons now. If you want to hear your name shouted out, every single name, you can go to the end of these episodes. So don't skip to the end. Please listen to the whole thing first and then go listen to your name at the end. But we do have a new bonsai best friend, Mark Mallett. Did I say that right?
Mallett?
That one? Oh,
I don't know.
Mark Mallett. We're going with that one. Thank you,
Mallett.
Mark. Mallett.
I mean, if you're going to, yeah, if you're going to be fancy about it.
Because it is M-A-R-C, so Mark Mallett. It could be that.
There you go.
Thank you, Mark, so much for sponsoring the Little Things and keeping us funded so we can continue to put out bonsai educational content on our podcast show. Thank you so much at supporting at that level. And then we're going to do our featured best bud. We always like to bring back one of our former best buds at the beginning of our episodes and mention them real quick. We're going to mention Christina Carforia. Thank you so much for sponsoring. It was nice to meet you at the Denver Botanical Gardens ABS show that, what was it, 2 years ago? I feel like 2 years.
I don't even know. It was not this year, the previous. Yeah. Yep.
One of those years. And then, of course, we have our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools, sponsoring the show. And then I can't go much further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He makes us sound smart, cleans up our audio, makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com and contact him to start your own podcast show or audio engineering project with him. He is a set basis living in Nashville, Tennessee. He's an all-around awesome guy. And I say it every single time because it's in the script. Also, specimen best buds on Ryuin. It is true. On Ryuin, Bonsai Garden Australia, and Bill Butler, Bill's by you. You're welcome. All right, so... where was I with so the sponsorship, we'll go back on that for a second. The scholarship,
scholarship, yes.
Yeah, there we go. The little things support the little trees.
Thanks.
All right, little things support little things. So we had mentioned this a little while back on the Bonsai Goals episode is when we unveiled it that we will be awarding around the price of $200 to someone who wants to basically attend a bonsai workshop, class, or event, or something that will educate them and further their knowledge in bonsai and the art of bonsai. So we also had contact with John of Joshua Roth Tools recently, and he told me that he wants to, in addition to, add $200 or $300. I'm not sure which one just yet. Depends on how we want to lay out these tools and what tools that the person would need. But he wants to award them as well with Joshua Roth branded tools as well. It's an amazing deal. If I was young again, back whenever I first got into bonsai, this would be something I would jump on. It's kind of an awesome thing. So all you got to do is email me, evan@underhillbonsai.com. Email your bonsai story, email me what you want to do with bonsai, what are your plans. If you're doing it for yourself, that's great. No judgment there. I think everyone deserves a good bonsai and to learn how to properly care for trees and have a passion for it. That's totally an honest answer. But don't just give me that. Give me more to it than that. Or if you wanted to pursue it professionally or as a career, or you want to work at a bonsai nursery or work with a bonsai professional as an apprentice or, so on and so forth, just let us know. Give us a full readout. And me and Carmen are currently reviewing applicants as we speak. So awesome. And those
let us give you money. We want to give you money.
Let us help you. Help us help you. But we are currently reviewing applicants for those who have submitted thus far. Thank you so much. We can't wait to unveil the person who will be awarded the scholarship on 100. So, I was kind of thinking for episode 100, we would try to do something unique. We will unveil that in the next episode.
We're doing. Yeah, good, because you got time to figure something out. I'm not prepared for this.
No, I didn't tell Carmen yet what I was thinking, but we're going to prepare.
I can't wait.
but we're getting there. We're getting there. So, but anyway, but in other news, let's see, there is a convention down in Florida, right? It's the state convention. Let me make sure I don't mess it up. I'm going to call it the right name. Mike Lane would be very, very familiar with this. So the BSF clubs of Florida. So the Bonsai Societies of Florida, basically, they have a yearly show, a state show, and this time it's going to be in Orlando. And they originally had another speaker, but he had to be replaced by yours truly. So I will be presenting alongside Laurent Darrow in May. I think it's the 28th, and might be the same dates with it, within the same days of like how, say, Bonsai set up. Like it's like in a weekend at the end of that month.
That's so exciting. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It's the 24th, 25th, and 26th of May, 2025. I will be doing some stuff. I don't know what it is quite yet, but I'll be doing demos and workshops. And but it's going to be a big day out too, because I'll be able to vendor, and also I've got some trees I'm prepping for that show. And since I'm the bald cypress guy that they'll be having, I'm just going to bring all my bald cypresses, you know.
I was going to say, it would be silly if you didn't do something that had to do with bald cypress.
I think I'm just going to bring four bald cypresses in distinct different styles, and that's just what I'm going to go with. So that sounds fun.
I like it.
Yeah, that's going to be good. Anyway, any interesting news on your side of the, I guess, on the West Coast, represent the West Coast, you know what I mean? Cool side of the country. Exactly.
You can say that.
The same tempered zone as where I'm at still somehow.
Yeah. Not really much news to report. We're starting to prep stuff. Well, we've been prepping stuff, but we're like really prepping stuff now for the expo. That's coming up. That's like just over a month away. So that's pretty exciting, trying to put the finishing touches on some trees and then figure out how to get the trees safely down. We should talk about that sometime in an episode, how to transport your valuable trees to various locations, because it can be really nerve-wracking and real tricky to try and transport trees.
Recalls my Bonsai Central adventure, you can
it's a good thing your trees were packed well, because if you had crashed, that would have been
a mess.
Not much else to report, just working my way through a bunch of projects. The weather finally turned cool, which is excellent. We're in flannel season, so
yeah. I saw there's a lot of fall color on Instagram from Becoming Bonsai right now.
Yeah, a lot of stuff is changing, and whether or not that's just because of the weather, the trees in the landscape aren't really doing that much changing yet, but the trees in the garden are starting. So
that's what I find to be interesting, is I have a few trees of my own, even though the temperature hasn't really dropped below 70 a whole lot. Like maybe one or two of my personal trees have started to drop a few leaves and go fall color.
I wonder if it has to do with the root temperature being cooler because it's exposed to the air, I don't know how that works, if how temperature, I got to look into that. But yeah, it's interesting how that seems to differ from trees in the landscape. So, but I love fall. I'm so excited for fall. So it's my favorite bonsai season too, because I love pruning stuff. I love wiring stuff. So
that's what we do.
I guess so. But like tis the season for a lot of this stuff.
Wire and trim.
So very excited.
I've had a good number of conversations with Guy Guidry about how trees will turn fall color earlier because of the way that we treat them, as you know, especially like we're talking about deciduous trees here.
Yeah.
Whereas it's the need to, I don't know if you call it technique either. I guess it's just in practice, is to keep the leaves on the tree as long as possible. throughout the year. If you're not performing like a full defoliation for any particular reason to get, you know, to build a tree or do any kind of refinement stuff, that if you're doing a, like just a regular year with a deciduous tree and you're keeping the leaves on long term, then it will be the same leaves that it had in the springtime carry through to the fall season. And so the way that those leaves, I guess the way they are, because trees recycle leaves, like large, just like regular trees in landscape, they recycle their leaves. They can recycle their entire landscape. I mean, canopy, not landscape, their entire canopy before the fall even reaches us most of the time. And we don't even notice it because the leaf drops and stuff like that. Or droughts or whatever might happen, windstorms and whatnot, but with our bonsai a lot more protected. So maybe that's something to do with the fact that we've kept those leaves for so long that the tree just, any sign of like fall approaching, the tree is like, all right, I'm done. Because that, you know, like, I don't know. It's, I know it's not based off of any theory or anything, but.
Yeah, I think it's probably more to do with temperature or.
Something,
wavelength, but
the length of the day shortening.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the same for the trees in the landscape. But since the entire plant is up on a bench, it's probably cooler than, you know, the landscape trees whose roots are all well insulated. But I don't know. It's it could just be stress. That's the other thing. It could just be like, yeah, I'm over it. Bye. Yeah. So.
And I think also, there was this article that I actually read that Michael Hagedorn wrote a good while back that I really liked how he kind of simplified it for me, is that if a tree starts triggering its fall color and one section of the tree, like a lower branch or interior piece, goes fall color first, that's your sign that you need to work on that area because that's the weakest zone of the tree. Like, work on as in getting it more light in the next season or not trimming it at all. And I thought that was a really cool way to be like, that's kind of like a solved it kind of feel to it.
Yeah, that's a really great indicator for weak spots on trees, especially on, I see it a lot on maples, but you'll see it on other stuff too. Maples are real obvious about it. So if you notice that on your tree, yeah, try to figure out, you know, what's going on and why that section is not doing as well and what you could possibly do to, you know, beef it up next season. So,
yeah, not trimming a branch at all seems, it feels wrong, but it's so right for the tree. it's something that, it's like a discipline. After you discipline yourself to like keep your trees in check, like keeping everything like dialed back, pinched and pruned to keep all the energy balance in the tree, and then have this one weak branch. You have to not only notice it on the fall season before, but then also keep in mind for the next year.
A lot of times, if it's weak enough, it won't extend very much, so there won't be much to cut off to begin with. But
it'll be more obvious.
Yeah, but if it does put out a good extensions, then yeah, definitely don't cut it, because that's a good sign that it's getting stronger, and you want it to just really beef up for that season.
Tip to keep your branch tips extending. I'm full of them today.
A tip for the tips
is that if you want to tag a branch and then not forget to, you know, say, I'm not going to trim this tree, like trim this particular branch. Friend of mine puts pipe cleaners. A colored pipe cleaner on that branch, and will like wrap it around like a piece of wire, and then leave it on for the season to remind them to not.
So. Just don't put it on too tight, because you can get a wire scar from a pipe cleaner. I've done it. if you have multiple colors for different things, be sure you know what you're color coding for.
Coded to the trees like rainbow colored. You're having a great
time. Sometimes we have red twist or red pipe cleaners on for one thing, and green pipe cleaners on for another thing. It's like, okay, does this one mean cut it, or does it mean let it grow?
Is this stop and, or go?
Right. And you have to kind of play with context clues. So it's much easier if you just have a very simple system to begin with. Maybe write it down so you don't forget.
I'll put like tagger tape, the orange stuff on trees, because it expands a little bit more, but it will cut in eventually if you don't take it off. So that's a good point.
Yeah, but that's a good thing to use if you're, you know, worried about something cutting in. The tape does tend to stretch of it. So,
yeah. But anyway, so we're going to talk about indoor bonsai for a second. It's a subject that I didn't think we would ever talk about because we can't act like we're above these type of things. We are a beginner and educational, like starting from the base or starting from the Nabari. If you want to go there with it, I'm full of, I became a dad recently. So if you're not familiar and kept up with the lore of the show,
he's full of it.
I think that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, if you start from the base of bonsai and we kind of work our way into all the different nuanced things that we've discussed in the past, we can't shy away from things that are discussed very, very often in our line of work, which is, can you grow a tree indoors? Can you have a tree in your house? And there's two different ways to approach this kind of this, I guess, not question, because nobody questioned it, but I do get people come into the nursery at my nursery, Underhill Bonsai, saying that they intend to put the tree inside. And there's two ways to approach it. Can a tree just go in your house with no preparation, or can you gear up your location in your house to become a growing space for a bonsai? And there's a couple of different ways I think it could be approached. But the question of the first one is, I mean, you should know this, Carmen. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
No.
We both do. Yeah, we both do bonsai professionally here. No. So it's just like, okay. So I don't want to have to over explain it, but I mean, that's what we do here. We kind of just talk and talk until,
well, it's a podcast. What do you want us
podcast,
to do?
You can only hear us. Yeah. But yeah, indoor bonsai or the thought of growing bonsai indoors. I mean, from your perspective, Carmen, where do you think this comes from? Why do you think people think this?
I think what happens is that when people are first exposed to bonsai, it's on TV in a show or a cartoon or some, you know, they see it somewhere in somebody's office or in a museum, you know, in some place indoors, they see a bonsai on display. And so I think folks will oftentimes assume, well, and also you see them for sale inside of, you know, these big box stores. In the floral section, you don't see them outside with the garden center. You see them inside with the houseplants. So I think there's just this ingrained misconception that these trees are meant to grow indoors when ideally they will grow best outside. I'm the person who's going to say you can't grow bonsai inside, except you can if you have an incredibly complicated setup. It is not easy to do. You can do it, but if you want to be successful with your trees, probably the easiest thing to do is grow them outside, which is where they are meant to be grown. So,
yeah, or that's where they will grow. That's where certain plants, like they, that's just where they grow. That's the environment required for them to thrive. So, and from your perspective of it, I mean, that's just a solid, just like, you know, kind of a synopsis of like, this is where it came from. This is why it won't work. Not really. You didn't go too in depth with that, but it's just kind of like a straightforward, like, I wouldn't do that. Cause you know, but you're not saying that I caught you in your words there. You didn't say no, like an absolute no.
It's with bonsai, the answer is almost never absolutely yes or no. It's always, it depends. And
yeah, you said that so many times.
I know. It's like, again, it's the answer to this question too. It's like, well, it depends. Like, are you talking inside a greenhouse, inside a sunroom? Do you have a setup with temperature control and, you know, full spectrum lights? Are you able to maintain that environment, you know, that's optimal for plant growth? Or are you putting it on your coffee table and watering it once a week with your other house plants? Like, it's a very different thing. I know people who've grown plants indoors for years. They've never seen the sun. They just grow inside under lights. And they're perfectly fine, super healthy trees, gorgeous little bonsai. But again, they have a very different setup that is, you know, very detailed care all the time. So it's not just, you know, growing it on your coffee table.
Yeah.
So,
so from my perspective as a nurseryman, where I'm basically selling the vast majority of the stuff that I sell to people are going to be the beginner pieces, such as Procummins Nana, junipers, Chinese elms, dwarf jade, the Portucaria afra, more is its proper name, and then there's a couple other random ones that we'll do, like a sea hibiscus or a Vietnamese bluebell, Desmodium. So these species kind of all have just like different range of different expectations and different explanations of how to take care of them. Whereas with I have somebody come in and I wish I had like a survey of how many people come in thinking that they can grow the tree inside versus how many people have done research beforehand. And I think the right answer for this for myself is like the vast majority of the people that come in looking for a quote unquote indoor bonsai tree is somebody who's buying a gift for someone else. So that's going to be like, and I'm not trying to harsh anyone's mellow here on this and like give anyone a hard time. But
I am. Just kidding. Sorry.
You're knee deep.
I'm here
bonsai.
To ruin your day.
Yeah. So she's in it. She's like bonsai mafia. She'll go out and get you for growing bonsai indoors. Trust me. No. We're understanding, right, Carmen? We're an understanding crowd of people, small crowd. Like I said, I'm not bashing anyone for not having done research before wanting to buy their loved one or a friend a bonsai tree. Because, I mean, that's awesome to want to give somebody something that's unique and that has that I think it kind of branches into two different sections of like what they think of bonsai versus their perception of bonsai. Like somebody will see it kind of like a novelty.
Uh-huh.
And then the other side of it, someone will see it as more of like kind of like a curiosity. I guess that's another way to look at it. Does that make sense? Are those two different avenues enough to make that make sense? So novelty and a curiosity kind of aspect. How do you think? What is your kind of terminology on it?
Well, I don't know where you're going with it, not sure.
I thought you had like an aha moment and you were like, oh wait, I know where he's going, but no.
I have no idea where you're going.
A novelty, what I mean by that is that you would see it somewhere indoors, like you said, in a movie, Mr. Miyagi, everybody loves that guy. I mean, he's probably the bonsai artist of the generation for America, because he inspired millions without even really practicing bonsai. But he was using it philosophically to teach Daniel-san. But that's the novelty of bonsai is like, oh, that's really cool. I would love to have that. I've heard people say all kinds of different things. Back when you could put bonsai trees on top of TVs, remember when TVs weren't flat? They were like tube TVs? Yeah, we're that old. And there's actually like an old Bonsai Today magazine that I was flipping through one time, and there was a tube TV illustration of a bonsai tree on top of it. And it was like demonstrating where to not keep your bonsai tree. If you get one. It's really funny. And that was printed in like 1994. So yeah. I think it's people want to put it on their coffee table, like you formerly mentioned, their TV, their kitchen window is a really popular one. I almost always hear either coffee table, my desk, or my kitchen window, because those are like spots where I guess make the most sense to people for plants. So, but we're not talking about a regular plan, obviously. But if it's a novelty factor and they're just like, okay, this is, it's like you get your Monstera. It's like they sit down. There's like a menu of like of exotic options for plants. They're like old man cactus covered in that weird furry stuff, a Monstera, or a bonsai tree. You know, like, ooh, those are really cool. I'll take the bonsai tree.
Right.
And you know, and so you put it in your kitchen window, which would make the most sense to some people. And shamelessly, I put a bonsai tree in a kitchen window when I very, very first started. So
I shouldn't say this, but I successfully grew a ficus in my kitchen window.
There you go. So that's where we're
but successfully, I did it. I grew it.
Yeah. So we're going to have to circle back around to that. But but then the other side is the curiosity. So I've had people come in and say, my grandson, my son, my husband, my granddaughter, whatever, whoever they might be talking about. Usually it's the majority of time it's a grandchild of some kind. It's kind of funny. They're like, they're really analytical and they love to grow things. They like to see how things work. And so I think bonsai would be great for them. And that's the more of the curiosity side. That's what I was talking about earlier. So it's like, oh, this person will be able to figure out and not mess it up, hopefully, you know. So that's the indoor bonsai that will be easier to translate and get them onto the right track so I can make the best recommendations for that person who's going to own that tree.
Yeah.
Whereas I've had the novelty side of the people come in and they come in, they're like, I'm going to put this tree in my workout studio because it's my dojo. And I'm like, well, that tree's not going to grow in your dojo. It's going to die. And then they'll be like, all right, well, screw this. I didn't want to buy a bonsai tree from you anyway. And then they go to Home Goods and buy one. But, you know, but that, I'm not saying that's never happened to me. It might have one time. I don't know.
It could
have happened. I'm not burned from that or anything. No. But no, that's, you can't, it's like for some people, you can't not tell them to do something either. I can only strongly recommend that they don't do it as well. Yeah. That's part of the customer service thing too. Can you grow a tree indoors? Where you just slightly contradicted our whole conversation a second ago. Yes, you can.
Yeah, I'm not being very helpful to this whole don't grow your bonsai indoors. You can. I'm not saying it's easier that you should do it, but you can.
No, I mean, this episode is less informational about like, no, it, I mean, I mean, we're, it's all, I mean, this is all information. I mean, like, it's like less straightforward, informative, a little bit more, but more debate about this. Because I've seen it in so many different ways now, that I've actually been surprised by things too. So,
I mean, I know somebody who grew their entire collection of ficus indoors.
Yeah.
Like big ones, like big as me.
As big as you. That would be roughly like a Khifu show, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, Khifu show it's like 18 inches to like 24 inches. I'm just messing with you. No,
bigger than that.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I mean, it really, really depends on your setup though. We can kind of get into that in a second.
Right.
But species that won't work inside. I mean, there has to be a cutoff, right? There's just a...
Oh, anything that needs a cold period, good luck.
Yeah.
Unless you want to keep your house at like 34 degrees for 6 to 8 weeks.
Which would be fine. I mean, some people keep their thermostats at 65 degrees. What's the difference?
30 degrees or so.
I mean, it feels like an actual cave in there. Well, why the hell not? I mean, there's also that debate of like, if we can get a cold period, and I'm going to have to go back on a few people have said this, and you've said this yourself. What if
bonsai
you put a tree in a fridge?
I've done it.
Then what? Now what? What are you going to do now?
I mean, it wasn't a fridge. It was a walk-in cooler, but essentially it's the same thing.
Yeah. Did you need a light in there?
Nope.
No light, no UV light supplement at all.
Didn't have any leaves. Didn't matter.
And it came out alive on the other side.
Oh, yeah, it was fine.
Okay. I still need to do that. I still need to give that a shot. The deep freeze a tree. I need to take a... You think it would work with like a... Like in a Chinese elm?
Could oh, I take yeah. I put a Chinese elm in there.
Chinese elm in my freezer.
No, you're not your freezer, your fridge.
My refrigerator.
Yeah, if you freeze it, it's going to die. But if you put it in your fridge, you'll be fine.
Okay. So if I can put it in my refrigerator, which is usually right above the 32 freezing mark, it's like 34, isn't it?
Jesus, you keep your fridge real cold.
I don't know. I haven't.
I think we usually keep ours around 42.
I don't see.
We're all very tired today.
Yeah. I don't know what. Okay. Hold on.
Fridge is in the 40s usually.
Okay.
I'm going to let my cat out of the room real quick. He's meowing. Hold on. This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just want to tell you guys about Save Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025. We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend, so we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also, the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Shohin, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bianski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry. Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Save Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent, and then all the workshops will be spaced out, and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
What did you find out about refrigerators?
Okay. So for refrigerator aficionados out there, I'm sure you guys already knew this, but it's 40 degrees.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Is the ideal temperature for refrigerators to maintain at.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you don't
ever put lettuce like way in the back of your fridge and it got a little too cold and then your lettuce freezes and it's like disgusting. You can't eat it anymore.
It's like crispy when you take it out and it melts.
I hate it when that happens. Yeah, it's like iced lettuce.
Iceberg
lettuce.
Yeah, there we go.
Hey. Uh-huh. Gross.
We should stop. No, yeah, I mean, I probably would take a Chinese elm this season just for fun. How about that? We'll do some challenge here. Get somebody, one of our other listeners.
Somebody get a fridge.
Someone else. Somebody go buy the refrigerator right now. For science. No.
Put it in your garage next to your beer. Your bonsai. Yep. Put your bonsai in your beer fridge next to your beer.
There you go. And then forget about it.
For a while.
And then...
Okay, you put one in the fridge. I'll put one in a walk-in cooler. And we'll, like, do updates and photos. And, I'm going to say it can't necessarily be any species that needs a cold period. Because, like, I wouldn't put an azalea in a dark, cold place for multiple years in a row. For a year? Like, for one cold period?
Yeah.
It'll be fine. But over time, those, you know, are better with a little bit of light over the wintertime. But a Chinese elm? Sure.
This is where we're getting a little bit more species specific with temperatures. Whereas azalea wouldn't be able to do it.
You can't just put any bonsai in your fridge. You know what? We need to cancel this show. What are we talking about?
No. I want to see like a Chinese elm, like saran wrap, like a sandwich next to your Subway sandwiches in there.
Eat my like Jimmy John's in the walk-in cooler with my Chinese elm.
Ooh, Jimmy John's or Subway?
Jimmy John's.
You're probably a Jimmy John's person. You know, we have Jimmy John's down in Southeast Florida here, and they are not good. I'm going to be honest with you.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
They're bland. Delicious.
Are they flavorful where you're from?
It's better than Subway.
I'm just messing with you.
Because like if you go into Subway, if you sit in a Subway for long enough to eat your sandwich, you walk out smelling like that cheese bread. I'm not here for it. No thank you. Absolutely not.
And that is a fact. I used to go to a trading card store that was unfortunately next door to a Subway.
Every card smelled like cheese bread.
The smell of the cheese bread steeped through the wall. Ugh. It just smelled like a Subway inside of the card shop.
Oh my God.
Can't get
rid of it.
Sorry about that. Anyway. I didn't realize it was the cheese bread smell in the places.
I think it's the cheese bread. I don't know what else it would be.
It makes sense. It is a weird thing to think of. It's just like cheese burnt on a bread. It makes sense. Ugh. It smelled like that kind of slightly. Yeah.
I'm smelling it right now. I can imagine it. I can't picture it. I can imagine it.
I mean, the only thing that I've ever gotten from Subway is the tuna, with like the old school spicy tuna.
Why are you getting tuna at Subway? I don't even think that's tuna.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I really like tuna sandwiches a lot.
I mean, I do too. No offense to tuna. I love a tuna sandwich, but Subway tuna? No way.
It was just a quick thing. I don't know. I can't remember what period of my life where I was just like Subway sandwiches.
What period of your life were you eating tuna Subway sandwiches?
I don't know. I think I was trying to be a cheap college student, but that was not cheap. You think back about it, and the $5 foot long is not $5 when you add on drink and a cookie.
Yeah, it's like $7.99.
But it's even more than that now.
One time I bought, never mind.
No, go ahead. We're about to skate away from this topic because I don't know why the hell we got here. But what were you going to say?
One time I bought a purse big enough to fit a $5 foot long in so I could sneak into the movie theater.
What have we become? Where are we going with this? So anyway,
edit that out.
No, just leave it in. It doesn't even matter anymore. It doesn't even matter anymore.
What are we talking about?
Oh, God. We're almost at episode 100.
We're telling people to put bonsai in their fridge.
We've derailed.
Start over.
No, we can't start over. We have come this far.
Oh, my God.
No, please put a refrigerator bonsai. Yeah, I think that's a great way. But that is technically an indoor bonsai, isn't it? Because it's in your refrigerator. Only it's a garage bonsai. It could be in your beer fridge, but it is technically.
I mean, it's in a cold storage location. That doesn't mean that it's being grown indoors year round. That just means it's getting a cold treatment in your fridge.
But if the circumstances and the variables were correct, if you grew your trees indoors and they needed a cold period, could you transfer it to the fridge away from the area that it is being grown in your house?
Probably. But it's much easier to just grow them outside.
Exactly. That's where I'm trying to build up to that. I'm trying to build up to it. Let's forget that it's easier. Let's just act like we're talking about something here.
I believe you could.
Who said it couldn't? It sounds abstract, but with the right circumstances, it could work. Mm-hmm. Right? So,
sure.
just act like we're just going to omit that. Let's talk about the things that actually make trees happy. Like, why is this such a big conundrum to begin with, right? So
yeah, mostly it's light.
Mostly
it's light. Inside, you do not have good
light.
You don't have full spectrum. You don't have direct sunlight. And those are things like plants eat light. Essentially, they need light in order to photosynthesize and create the sugars that they need for literally everything involved in their life.
I'll give you something. I'm gonna put you on the spot here.
Okay.
I'm gonna be the customer that walks into the bonsai nursery, and I'm just gonna ask you. Okay, so I want to buy this Procummins Nana It's a really cool tree that's got some really interesting S-curve movement to it. I think this is the coolest tree I've ever seen.
Oh my God.
And so I want to put it in my kitchen window. I think that would be a great spot because in the mornings when I get up and make coffee, I would really love to have some solace and some quiet time because, you know, I work in accounting. I mean, I really need a moment. I'm sorry for anyone that works in accounting for real.
Before your toddler gets up and you have to go to work.
Yeah, before my young ones get up out of bed and throw stuff. I'm just saying it. They throw shit on the floor. I just want a moment to look out the window and enjoy my bonsai tree. Can I just grow it in my kitchen window? Is that fair? I mean,
I would recommend growing it on your deck and having your coffee outside.
But I mean, but you mentioned that I needed good sun, but that's in my window, right?
Yes.
But why can't I get good sunlight out of my kitchen window?
Well, because your kitchen window still filters out the light. It's not direct sunlight. It's not going to be in direct light all day. And really, it's just not enough light for something like a juniper.
I mean, there is UV protection. We did just get our windows replaced. So I guess I can make sense of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's double paned, it's got the mm-hmm. What's that? That gas that
they put
in between the panes to make it more resistant. I don't know. But I guess if there's UV protection on my windows, that would make more sense to me personally. But so if I have a porch, can it be my covered porch? Is that fine? I mean, is that enough sunlight?
No, still not enough.
I don't know if I want to buy this tree right now because I just wanted to put it in my window and enjoy it. And now you're telling me I can even grow it on my porch. That's my other place. That's my other temple of solitude is my,
have you considered
my back
an
porch.
African violet?
An African violet. they say to bottom water those, but I never understand how the pots work.
You don't have to bottom water them.
Why would they sell them in that pot that I have to dip inside of that other pot that just tells you to bottom water only?
You buy the special pot. That's because you're bottom watering them.
That's why they die?
Have you put them in your kitchen window?
No, but why can't I use my back porch though? For real. Like
there really just isn't enough light there. If you wanted to grow a shade tree, you could try something.
Grow something that doesn't prefer a lot of sunlight is what you're saying. So why can't the juniper take a low light? I thought that was, I mean, I didn't even know. Like, I'm just coming from my perspective. I had no idea a juniper would even need sunlight like this. Like, why?
Well, because where junipers grow, they're usually in direct sunlight for 8 hours a day.
8 hours a day? My back porch only gets like maybe two because it's on the west side of my house.
Precisely. That's not enough sunlight.
But that would also put it like evening. Is evening sun okay?
Not enough.
Then what am I going to do with this brand new juniper bonsai that you tricked me into buying? This tree was $50. What am I supposed to do?
I told you to buy an African violet. You're supposed to return it.
Do y'all even sell African violets? That's my next question.
Sorry, no returns.
Yeah, yeah. So you you buy it. No. Every sale.
No
final.
Returns or exchanges. Yeah.
At Carmen's final. Nursery. Yeah. Look out when she goes back to Ann Arbor. buy a juniper for her. But like, so we have to put our junipers in. Now, I'm not doing the whole thing anymore. There's a bit
over.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, darn. Juniper. Yeah.
Right. Wow, full sun, please.
Full sun because it's normally
full sun.
But it's because it grows
in places with full sun. It needs it. Otherwise,
it was an alpine or arid environment tree, right?
Yeah, or wherever. I don't know where they all grow. They grow everywhere. They grow all kinds of places. Genetically, they just need light because otherwise they cannot photosynthesize and then they will die.
Genetically, junipers are full sun plants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just all day, every day. They could survive in an environment where they never get shade. Except for
cloudy days and nighttime.
Yeah, basically. But then we'll go back on the other extreme end of the spectrum. We said ficuses. Like, why can't my ficus grow in my kitchen window and my juniper can't?
You can grow a ficus in your kitchen window because ficuses they tend to not need as much light as something like a juniper. Some of them grow in like tropical areas as understory trees. A lot of times ficus will shed their leaves and put out new leaves based on the light situation. I've had trees that I've moved indoors that have dropped all their leaves and put out thinner leaves that are better for shade. I've put out trees from inside to outside where they drop all their leaves and put out thicker, chunkier leaves for sunshine. So they're a little bit more adaptable. They don't need full sun all the time. They can tolerate full sun, but they don't need it. If you were to grow a ficus inside, I still would recommend a grow light, but you can keep them alive like over the winter in your kitchen window if your kitchen window has good light. That's what I did. I mean, I wasn't growing my ficus inside year round. It was just to keep it protected over the winter, and it lived. It didn't thrive, but it lived. Yeah. If I had wanted it to thrive, it would have been a different situation. So that's
the word we need to come back around to every single time.
Thrive.
Will it thrive? Yes. What is thriving? Right.
Thriving would be, yeah, actively growing, putting out new shoots, new leaves, getting thicker, good color, you know, just overall looking like it would look growing outside pretty much.
Which is cheaper and easier. But so if you did want to grow your ficus indoors, you did mention grow lights. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in the day when I first got into bonsai, I was actually interested in investing in grow lights to mm-hmm. make some things work, right? Because mm-hmm. back when you're first starting out, I mean, we're starting literally from just like the, you know, the surface here of like, well, okay, well, if I have to get grow lights, I'd as well. And grow lights back in the day when I was going to look at it, this was over 10 years ago, they were not affordable.
Right.
The UV lights that you put like in a, the best example is like, think of a saltwater aquarium. Like require some serious like UV and multi-spectrum lights to put in there, and they're not mm-hmm. cheap.
No.
And for a little while, that was kind of the only way to really go about it was to get high quality UV bar, like those big long bar light kind of things. But nowadays you can go get a UV light. You can get one off Amazon for like $5.
Yeah, so, I've got a couple different kinds of grow lights indoors, some that stick directly in pots. And these are not for my bonsai, just to clarify at the moment. They're for my orchids and houseplants. They just sell grow bulbs that you can put in any regular lamp. They sell specific grow lights you can put under shelves or right in pots that hang out just above your plant. But I think with all of the... what do you call it? All the hydroponic and indoor growing that's going on nowadays. Grow lights are just, they're more affordable because more people need them. You know, the demand is there. So the prices have dropped because there's just more of a supply to meet that demand. Yay, economics.
Okay.
Who am I?
Basics.
Supply demand curve. Anyway.
So
they're just much more accessible and much more affordable now. Quality matters. So I think like if you're seriously growing your trees inside, you would want to like invest in some really good grow lights. Not necessarily just like a cheapo bulb off of Amazon.
You still need to go up a little bit more.
You want to be sure that you're meeting the light requirement because not all grow lights emit the same amount of light. And plants have different requirements for how much they need and for how long of it in the day that they need it and all of that stuff. So you really have to know your stuff and know what your plant requires and what your grow lights are giving you to be really successful growing anything inside.
Hmm. I guess my next, the next thing out, this is kind of like the, it's like a reverse sales pitch that I use mm-hmm. At the nursery when I'm telling people, I'm talking them down off the indoor bonsai thing. And one of the things that comes up, I'm like, there's no airflow. And there isn't. Well, there is airflow in your house.
But what if you open your window or put a fan on it?
There you go. That's kind of like one of the things. Like I always, if I tell people things about this, it's kind of like I say that. And then it's like, it's followed up with like, oh, well, that was a stupid thing to say. Like, you can't grow a tree without sunlight. And they put it in their window. And I'm like, well, you need airflow. They're like, we get a little fan. And then like, I think one of the biggest determining factors for me is like humidity. You can't artificially create humidity in your house that will be comparable to what certain species would need to be.
Yeah,
happy.
You don't want it to be like 50% humidity in your house. That'd be gross.
Yeah, you could open all the windows of your house and then turn off your AC unit and then just like ride it out.
But then like, why aren't you just outside?
Yeah. So that's one of the things that like, you know, junipers don't really need like an abundant amount of humidity, but a little bit does go a long way for them.
It's helpful.
It keeps them cool when it's the hottest time of the year, if they really need it, and yada, yada. Yeah, humidity in plants. We could go a whole episode of like how humidity works and condensation on trees and transfer of, you know. Yeah, but we don't want to go into that with the indoor bonsai topic kind of wrapped up in it, because it doesn't make any sense, because it just, it's not realistic. Unless you want to melt your wallpaper, you don't really want to have humidity in your house to that extent. And you said 50%. I mean, imagine here where humidity's at an all-time high of 110 all the time.
No, and thank you.
Yeah, like, I can't even simulate that in my own house, you know. I mean, it could, but you never would want to.
No.
And can humidity also work at set? Like, okay. And here's another thing that always gets, that always stumps them, you know, when they're always like, well, I'm going to grow my, you know, what temperature do you prefer your house to be at all times of the year? Think about that. Because trees are on cycles.
Well, that's a pretty good temperature for, you know.
Tropicals?
No. I mean, just for like a daytime temperature, they don't really need it that much warmer than what you would keep your house. But if you have something that needs a cold period, yeah, that's not going to be cold enough.
Now, so you're a little bit more horticulture approach on it than I am, because from my understanding is that the downswing of the day is very beneficial when the sun goes down and there's a taper off slightly in temperature depending on the time of year.
Yeah. That is important. That'll signal certain responses within a plant. That'll sometimes signal flowering. That's how I get most of my orchids. I mean, those aren't bonsai, but that's how you get them to rebloom, is the swing between daytime, nighttime temperature. So that is important. So if you keep your house at a constant temperature, it's okay for some plants, but a lot of plants, you know, kind of need those cyclical changes.
Yeah. But not all of them is what you were kind of saying.
Because if you were, if you keep a greenhouse, you know, within a temperature range, you don't always necessarily need to keep it. You don't always need to have a huge day night shift. You can, to save energy, because your plants don't mind it, but you can grow plants at a constant temperature. You just may not get flowering or, you know, initiation of some of the other processes if you do that. So it depends what you're growing and why.
Yeah. So, I mean, so for you, what do you keep your temperature normally at?
In the house?
Yeah.
Oh, somewhere between 68 and 74.
That's a pretty broad swing.
It depends on the time of year. Okay. Yeah, are in the, like, when we actually have to do temperature control, in the winter, heat's on at 68. In the summer, AC's on at like 74. Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of weird, though, because I'm kind of thinking about it from the perspective of like somebody who lives in a zone where it's like always hot here. So our temperatures are always set to almost the same temperature all year. Whereas I just realized that, especially for if you go to Michigan, it's a way different.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and also heat from like, I'm assuming you guys would use a lot of gas heat where you guys are at. Because energy bills would kill you guys. But here in Louisiana, it's typically, for me, I like it to be 72 to 74. My wife, Caitlin, likes it a little bit cooler than that. She would ride it all the way down to 68 if it didn't need her electric bill.
If I could keep it at 68, I would.
Yeah. You're like sweater weather inside your house all the time.
All the time.
Those temperatures feel a little cool compared to what I'm used to growing certain trees here where I'm at too.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my temperate zone trees and my tropicals that I grow, and I grow them outdoors, if it's 90 degrees and I hear people complaining, I know my trees are not complaining, is usually how I look at it. Whereas if it's the other way around and everyone's just like, oh, it's nice outside, I'm like, well, okay, well, now a seasonal change. Something is going to, something's going to change with my trees. Mm-hmm. I've even had people say, when I go to buy a tree from me, they're like, okay, well, I have to keep it outside, but what happens when it gets really hot outside? And I'm like, they love it. At least from my perspective,
to a point. If you look at photosynthesis is a bell curve with temperature, and same as with light. You know, like there's a certain point where if you increase temperature, the rate of photosynthesis increases until a certain point where it's so hot that the plant starts, those processes start shutting down. And so then you have a big decrease in photosynthesis. But if you're talking, and that's just looking at temperature, but if you factor in humidity, that's going to change how the temperature affects the rate of photosynthesis. The amount of light is also going to, there gets to be a point where there's too much light and the plant doesn't photosynthesize anymore, like it's maxed out. So there's always a point at which you can't really get your plant to do more than it can do. You've maxed it out. So I don't remember where I was going with that, but So I mean, I see a lot of our plants here that kind of shut down during super hot days, but those days here are also usually super arid. If we had more humidity, plants likely wouldn't shut down as much as they do when it's super arid. Because I'm thinking back to Michigan, and you don't have the same kind of plant shut down usually with that kind of heat because there's more humidity. But even so, there will still reach a point, like if you hit 120, even if you're at 80% humidity, you may not have, your plants may shut down. But, that's just for the day, the time.
At 120, I'd be protecting them in the shade area at that point. And there's obvious swings in temperature, but 90s is perfect here for me.
That's I mean, a lot of times I notice the plants here take up more water when it's 75. They seem to be more active at cooler temperatures. And so, there's a range, but all of these other factors, light intensity, temperature, water availability, all this stuff affects your rate of photosynthesis. So, the one benefit of growing something inside, and this, I mean, ideally would be a greenhouse where you actually have good light, is that you can control that environment so you can have optimal growth all the time. However, your house is not a greenhouse. You can't control the temperature, the humidity, the light, all the same all the time to get that kind of optimal growth that you would outside or in a greenhouse.
And the joke I usually make, it kind of like leads into a punchline kind of thing. That's the best way to set up a joke, is to tell somebody a punchline is coming.
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. No, is that whenever we start having this conversation with me and the customer, talk about the buying the tree, and I'm like, well, if you want to grow it in your house, let's start with your grow light. Then let's start by talking about you. If you want to get a humidifier and you want to isolate them to a space where humidity is not that much of it, that big of a deal to you, and then you want to put in some fans and get some airflow in there. And then you have to start thinking about, like, treating things, like, in case you don't want to get like mildew or overly wet spots, dry spots. You want to kind of, go in there and make sure you're paying attention to if you have like fungicides and then, stuff like that. You want to kind of keep on top of things. But it gets to a point where you have such a complicated setup inside of your house in a secluded room that it seems like you're growing something else.
Right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Picking up what you're putting
down. Which in that case, why not expand? No, I'm just kidding. I will say that that is, if you're going to go for it, I will say that with the rise of all of these home grow operations, there's a lot more stuff available to bonsai folks. So that's the plus, you know, like we have access to these awesome fertilizers and awesome lights and awesome door stuff. But
it's just so much cheaper. Outside,
it's much easier.
That's what I always tell them. I always drop that that little joke, and they're always and some people catch on. They're like growing what? And I'm like,
lettuce, of course.
Growing the perfect rose. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to imagine.
Yeah.
But no. I'm just referring to a King of the Hill episode where Bobby grows a perfect rose in his closet, and it's like the same thing where Hank has to go to a he goes to a head shop and he buys like all the proper indoor growing equipment. I love that episode. But yeah, it's, you know, I tell people, it's like, you want to go through all that or you just want to do it for free? You know, take it outside your house and put it out there and water it, you know? So can you grow a tree indoors? I think we've come full circle. You can.
It's very complicated.
Yeah. But we did mention a little earlier, but there's more.
There's more.
But there could also be a chance that, like you said, during winter dormancy, for most trees, whenever you have a tropical plant, let's say you got one bonsai and it's like a sweet little just like ficus. Another species that works too and works surprisingly well is a Schaffalera. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Any of these little tropical buddies that are, you know, even a jade, because, I mean, I grow jade inside as a house plant, so...
Which surprises the hell out of me.
I mean, they don't grow that fast. If you grow them outside, they grow much faster.
Yes, here.
But they're great to bring in the wintertime.
I've grown some pretty nice little like Mame and Shohin Portulacaria. And you could also refer to like, was it Little Jade Bonsai on Instagram? We interviewed Gilbert Cantu. I'm sorry, buddy. I haven't seen your Instagram page in a little while. I saw a post from it earlier. Yeah, Little Jade Bonsai. Go to his Instagram, and he's growing a bunch of Portulacaria, and you know, and you can take that tree inside. Yeah, and I've seen that's actually one of the trees I've seen in recent. And this is one of the things I was also going to bring up. There's bonsai publications that talk about indoor bonsai, and this is where it gets even more misleading.
Right.
It's like, what the hell do I do with that? You know, because Portulacaria afra, or the dwarf jade money tree, the other species is like it's a golem plant. I forgot the name of that plant. It's actually a cactus. It's like a succulent thing. Golem plant. The Crassula ovata. Have you heard of those?
Yeah, I just can't think of what it is.
As a
bonsai? You grow it as a bonsai?
Well, people will see it as like an indoor plant.
Oh, yeah. Those also do better outside. Hey, the succulents will do better outside because they grow outside in the sun all the time.
Yeah. Succulents do amazing in the sun. I actually had a really sweet little succulent that it was like it didn't have a spiny cactus kind of to it. It was more of like it popped up and then it had like three... like identical pieces would pop up and they would kind of come together like weird little fingers. And it rained for a couple of days and it swelled up real big. And I was like, oh, geez, I need to bring this thing inside. And
before then it pops.
And then exactly. And then hurricane. I can't even remember the name of the hurricane that just passed over us. It was
Lorraine. Was it Lorraine?
No, that was a long time ago.
I don't know what I'm thinking.
I think it was. Hold on. I'm not gonna do this. Hurricane, I think it was Florence. Francine that just passed. Yeah, it was Hurricane Francine. It wasn't that big of a deal. It came in as a Cat 2, went down to a Category 1, and then just fizzled out as soon as it hit the shoreline. But yeah, I left that same succulent out there and it got rained on for like 5 days. And me and a friend of mine that helped me out during the storm walking around and we found a completely deflated succulent. I was just like, oh man. And that little succulent was doing so good. I didn't even know its name. I didn't even know like what it was supposed to, if it was supposed to flower or anything, but
all flower if you can wait long enough.
Eventually, yeah, I guess. Because yeah, I've been surprised. I have a carry-on plant, succulent. It makes a big old ugly, big fuzzy looking flower thing. Ugh. And it smells.
Gross.
And it's flowering right now, which is kind of funny. I just noticed it the other day. Yeah.
Like what died in here? Oh, it's just my plant. Never mind.
It's my carry-on flower. Carry-on meaning rotting meat. Mm-hmm. It blows my mind with the dwarf jade. It's put in a lot of the bonsai publications that it is a indoor quality bonsai. And I've only seen dwarf jades grown as quality outdoor bonsai in like South Florida and up into Louisiana and Texas, where they do really well as an outdoor bonsai. And I wouldn't even bring a dwarf jade in my house during the winter. That's my experience being drastically different from yours, obviously.
Well, yeah, if you leave a dwarf jade outside in Portland or in Michigan, it's going to freeze and then die. Yeah. So you have to, but...
Now, dwarf jades can actually take temperatures down to 40 degrees and a little bit cooler even. But if they ever hit a frozen temperature, they will fizzle.
They will melt.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're like a limp celery. They'll just die.
It's really sad. It's like that lettuce you left in the back of your fridge that froze.
It is. Yeah. I'm glad that guy came back. Yeah. It's a full circle back to that guy. Mm-hmm. The dwarf jade, if you protect it, I have a friend who grows them in the ground and he covers them with a tarp during the winter and they grow in the ground still. They don't care. So if you took a dwarf jade and you put it on the ground and you covered it from frost, it would actually survive. It doesn't care about the cool or like the cold because it's actually like it's more of a South African plant that actually deals with those temperatures, but the humidity is different. Interesting fact about those trees.
Well, if it hits 30 under the tarp, it's still going to melt.
Yeah, it is a microclimate unique thing to it. So it's not going to survive, but if the ground temperature is high enough, which it's very high here because
your ground doesn't freeze, so if you cover it with a tarp it should be fine.
I forget about the things we can get away with sometimes here in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Like we just take a plant and if you suction cup it to the ground tight enough to like with a cellophane or a tarp, the ground temperature will keep it elevated enough to save it. Mm-hmm. That's a trick that I actually use if a tree is budding out in the spring and I have that late frost come along, I'll actually do that and save the buds. You can't do that in a lot of places, but here in Southeast areas, we can do that here because of the sea level is like almost negative here in some places. Not even joking, like New Orleans is under the sea level. It's kind of silly.
Right.
It's like 10 feet under in some places. The thing circling back to just like, it's a big misconception about indoor bonsai. It's actually kind of a weird callback to the very, very first episode of this podcast show. It was called Bonsai Misconceptions. It's the most listened to episode because it's the first one. Everyone starts there usually. And we talk about this and it's brought up between me and my friend Mark, who was way back in the day, first show host that I had. It's just something that you see a lot. You see them in that's something just alluding back to that. It was like the Sunset Books. That was something we talked about. Did you ever see those? Sunset Books was like a collection of hobbyist books that were printed back in like, I think the 60s and the 70s. And they even talk about bonsai as a novelty in there, more so than you could imagine. And so the indoor bonsai thing is just, it's just there. I think there's actually a cover of the Sunset magazine where there's a picture of a woman trimming the needles of a Japanese black pine on the cover. It's wonderful.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It is a thing. But anyway, there are very, very few species that I can think of off the top of my head that would do fine. So the answer is get a lot of grow lights or know the species you're dealing with. or put your tree in a refrigerator, or just put your trees outside. I think ultimately the answer to this question is outside.
Yes, I think if you want to grow a bonsai, you will be the most successful growing your tree outside. Yes. If you have to grow your tree inside, please consult a professional on how to do so.
Yeah.
There are certain people who have done it. And you can, I know Jerry Mieslick has done tropicals indoors, and he's got a book. I don't know if, I can't remember if he talks about how to grow them indoors in there, but he's a great resource for that. And I know somebody else who's grown shoheen and mambe under compact fluorescent lights very successfully. But again, this is not the norm. So unless you know what you're doing, or are talking directly with a professional about how to get a good setup, I would recommend growing your trees outside.
Yep.
If you want to grow something inside, get a Monstera or an African violet or an orchid.
And that book by Jerry is called The World of Ficus Bonsai.
The World of Ficus Bonsai.
Yeah. Looks like it's a good book. It's you can buy a hardcover on Amazon for $52 right now.
I have a signed copy.
Oh wow, look at you.
But Jerry's awesome.
Jerry is really cool. I saw one of his trees at the national show that one time, right?
The big ficus. Yeah. That was a
monster. Mm-hmm. Beautiful tree. Very beautiful. And not
I love
like,
that one.
Not even like a variant of ficus that people typically use. It's like super white bark. Like
I think it was just a retusa.
Yeah.
Microcarpa. They don't say retusa anymore.
But it wasn't like a tiger bark. It was like a very, very simple.
Your standard banyan.
Yeah, which is crazy. But yeah, if you're into ficuses and you want to grow a ficus bonsai indoors, I still would suggest you do them outside, especially if you live in a subtropical range. If you're below the...
Even over the summertime.
Yeah. If you're below the midpoint of the United States. And I know we have international listeners. I know you guys know the drill. If you live in like Southeast Asia or
then you'll be growing your ficus outside anyway.
Your ficus just grows outside.
Your ficus is growing on your house. So yeah.
There you and some people might even be able to pull off growing the trees indoors easier in certain areas than we can even.
Sure.
Depending on, cause you still like a sunroom. You can have a sunroom in your house and it would do great. I think sunrooms are kind of like, if it's a full on sunroom, like top like roof and sides and everything. Or even
if you have a covered roof, if it faces the correct direction for enough hours of the day to get direct sunlight, you can do some ficus and stuff inside.
Yeah. And ficuses are fine. Mm-hmm. They work. I personally prefer deciduous and other needle-like conifers.
Do you like bald cypress?
Possibly.
Oh, okay.
I've actually gotten on board with needle junipers recently.
Oh my, get out of here.
What? Why? What's wrong?
They're so pokey. I don't like them.
I was working on a big Fumina forest with my friend Justin Dardine, and he was like, do you have some gloves? And I was like, no, I don't know. Don't keep my gardening gloves in the right spots. I always misplace them. And he's like, okay, well, and we start working on the Filmina juniper forest that we have at the nursery. And he says, look at my hands. Look down. And they're covered in like what's looks like 1,000 like red dots. He's like,
yeah,
this doesn't seem right. I'm like, okay. Cause we don't normally work on that tree without gloves. And I was like, okay. And I was like, how about we work on this ficus? And then we go to just trim on a...
oh no, you need gloves for ficus too.
It was a catastrophe.
My hands get so itchy with ficus sap. Ugh.
Well, yeah, because he had like 1,000 little tiny pinpokes.
Oh,
and then
no.
He had that white, milky latex sap. And he was like, oh, this sucks.
This is the worst.
Yeah,
he had to work on the worst trees.
I was like, wait, I didn't think this through for you, man. I'm sorry. He had to go work on an elm tree or something to kind of relieve his hands.
Something very soft.
Yeah. But anyway. But no, I think this is good. This is Like I started the whole episode with us, like, we can't steer away from these type of things. This, like, there's no stupid questions is kind of what I'm saying. Like, if you get into Bonsai and this is your first listen through, I'm sorry, first of all, because not every episode's a banger. Not every episode hits as far as like being like revolutionary content.
I think this
is
pretty excellent.
Yeah, it's fun, but we're trying to make light of a situation in Bonsai that is unfortunate that we have mm-hmm. to explain this. Mm-hmm. And especially for me working at a Bonsai nursery, I have to tell the same story mm-hmm. every day, it seems, to somebody.
Yeah, you know, working in a collection, I have had a number of people come through and say, you know, I had a little juniper once and it died. And, you know, the first question I always ask is, were you growing it inside or outside? And most of the time they say inside. And, you know, there you go. So,
yep. And if you're new here and you like our content, make sure you subscribe and sign up for notifications on your streaming app for our podcast show. And a good companion to this episode would be the So I Got a Bonsai Tree for Christmas episode that we did. Also, a bare bones like basics episode that we did. I can't remember mm-hmm. what the name of that one,
you know,
was.
The Christmas episode is good because we do talk about overwintering a tree, an outdoor tree, indoors until you get to outdoor appropriate temperatures for your tree to go outside. So that's kind of the, if you have to grow your tree inside, here's what you can do to get through the rest of your winter. So that's a great companion to this episode.
Yep. For sure. And that is, oh, wow. We've done.
The Christmas episode. I was like 9 months ago.
Yep. That was episode 60.
And, ooh.
That was the holiday cheer episode. That's the one where we were goofing. Episode 61. You Got a Bonsai for Christmas. Go listen to that one. It's a good companion to this episode. Like Carmen said. I know we did another one where we did very straightforward, like your first bonsai tree episode as well.
I know we covered a lot of the basics in So You Got a Bonsai for Christmas, as far as, you know, fertilizer and pest control and light and all that. So did we do another one?
I think so. But anyway, maybe. You want more beginner bonsai content and you guys want to hear things said, I will go over to the Discord this coming week, and we will be collecting questions and comments from our Discord members, from our Bonsai Best Buds.
We should do a listener episode soon with listener questions.
Yeah, and I know that every once in a while, we will... I see a lot of good stuff in here. Every once in a while, we don't talk in the Discord as much as we would like to. Every once in a while, we'll pop in and say, hey. But Discord's there to support the Bonsai community that supports us. And also, you know, everybody can get a perspective on where our listeners are from and what everyone's doing, what stage of Bonsai, and their knowledge and their development as far as they are, not just their trees and learning. Mm-hmm. And we are going to pull from that and do a listeners episode before episode 100 here. A lot of really cool, interesting comments I see for sure that we can go back. And then also we have a critique, in here as well that we can do. We're looking forward to doing more of that type of content. But if you're a Bonsai Best Bud, drop us some more questions in there before the next episode. I'm getting ready to pull a lot of those questions. And then if you would hit me up on Instagram, you can go to Little Things for Bonsai People on Instagram to ask any question. There are no dumb questions. And I've had a prompt for a single, like I've had a prompt of like a single word, like I can't even remember what it was. Someone said something along the lines of, hell, I don't even know.
Somebody said something once and, you know, I was really thinking about it.
Exactly. Some of the one word props have turned into 2 hour episodes between us. So nothing is a stupid question. We are learning as well. So If we might say something now that we might record episode later on, it might be different. I don't know. We'll see. On our opinions and how the bonsai world is going. But but yeah, we feel pretty confident with this one. No? No?
I mean, I don't know that anybody should put a bonsai in a fridge, but...
I thought that was a pretty good take.
I'm going to try it, but...
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I'm going to give it a shot.
And, I've done it. I'll do it again, but...
Okay. So anyway, let me go ahead and go through our bonsai best buds and get to barking over here. So I'm going to go off our list of bonsai best buds that support us. At the end of every episode, we say y'all's names. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. You guys are awesome. I've met a number of you guys at conventions and shows, talked to you over the phone and et cetera, et cetera. You guys are all amazing. Thank you so much. Start off our list in no particular order. There are no favorites here. Wallace Woods Pottery, Bonsai Samurai, Ratron Studio, Kyle Ford, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominque, David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Byron Myrick Bonsai Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia, David J. Baccaccini, Gilbert Hoyes, Sean Seaman, Fairies Bonsai, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crean, Victrina Ridgeway, Timothy Arsenal, Chris Fassoon, Joss Potts, Bonsai Marine, A.C. Castle, Louis Torres, Karen Codswell, Austin Atkins, David N., Chase, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan Gardano, Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Vicky Off, Montana Bridgman, and Mark Mallett. I hope that's right. I don't think I messed up any of those names. I think I did.
Yay.
Great. You got passed.
Insert applause here.
Yeah. Matt, play us a laugh track with like applause. But then also you can just play a buzzer if I got one of them wrong now. You ever seen that episode of Always Sunny whenever they're on Family Feud?
No.
Oh, that's a good one where Dennis can't.
I made the mistake of
sound.
Trying to binge Always Sunny, and there's just so much yelling, you can't really binge it. So
that's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. It's a loud show.
We have a friend, and she was like, I really wanted to watch Always Sunny because you guys talk about it all the time. Me and Caitlin,
you really
watched
just got to spread it out.
And she's like, it stressed me the hell out. I couldn't sit mm-hmm. through more into. Yeah. If you're into raunchy, long run like comedies,
I liked it.
Shows,
don't get me wrong, it was excellent, but I had to. Take break.
It is basically the writers and just scripting out, and the people who write also act. So it's just like the thoughts of the comedians on the show, and they just yell at each other nonstop.
It's kind of like our podcast sounds. With less yelling.
Yeah. No,
with more yelling because we yell less.
Yeah. No, like less derogatory things. But anyway. Oh, yeah. We have Specimen Best Buds. Anrai UN, Bonsai Australia, and Bill's Bayou. Bill Butler, thank you for being an anchor for our Bonsai Best Buds. So anyway, yeah, like I said earlier, going to kind of just wrap it up here. I'm getting a little loony, it seems. But just mentioning again, Say Bonsai 2025, March 28th, 29th, and 30th. Sorry. It has been a long day.
Yeah.
I think there's even a commercial in these episodes that we talk about it. But I'm just going to say it again.
Oh, shoot. We have to make a commercial.
No, I already did it.
Wanted to do it.
Oh, you know what? At the end of this take for this episode, we'll do a back and forth.
Record a commercial.
Matt can take it and run with it. And then in May next year, that's this year. Terrible. My calendar and my phone. It's just my calendar and my phone. It's not like a official calendar to keep track of things. Right. May 22nd, 23rd, 24th, I will be headlining with Laurent Darrow in the Bonsai Society's state convention. That would be awesome if you guys were there. Just come say hey. I know we got a lot of listeners down there. And also for Carmen, go to the Pacific Boneside Expo. When is that?
Oh, gosh. October 26th and 27th?
Yeah.
Or 27th to 28th.
Didn't know there was going to be a quiz.
End of October, I will be there. I'm doing a demo on Saturday morning, but I will be there the entire weekend. So come say hi. And yeah.
Take a photo with Carmen and share it and tag little things. Take a photo with me and share it and tag little things. We will be hanging out. I can't wait to get back to conventions. I want to critique some more training stuff. It's coming up. But anyway, so if you guys want to follow any more content, you go over to underhillboneside.com. You look at articles that I wrote. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com. Ooh, pardon me. And buy some trees and pots and tools and stuff. We sell Joshua Roth tools on our website as well. Go over to check that out. We got some really good stuff. And then for Mike Lane, we miss you, buddy. We hadn't heard from you in a while, but we will keep shouting out Mike. So Mike Lane is a professional bonsai artist living in South Florida. It's a real Florida man down there. He instructs workshops, classes all over the United States. He travels and teaches the world wonderful Shohin techniques and tropical bonsai techniques. You can check him out at kitsunebonsai.com, or you can go over to Kitsune Bonsai on Instagram and see Mike's little fantastical works. And for Carmen, where they check out your stuff.
You can find me over on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai, and be sure to check out the Purple Pot Society, the national women's bonsai group that works to encourage and educate and inspire women to do more bonsai.
Awesome. Awesome. And you don't have to be exclusively a woman. You can be...
Correct. You can be...
Anyone.
Anybody. Come support.
Can support.
Yeah. Come support women doing bonsai.
Awesome. All right. Well, that was fun. The next episode, we will be talking to, I think we'll be talking to Carmen about her apprenticeship.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do that one. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.